All right, I need some volunteers. Somebody look up Mark 3, 1 to 6 and hold it. Who wants to do that? Thank you. Somebody look up Luke 6, starting with verse 6 and hold it. Who wants to do that?
Luke 6.
Okay, you have 6. You look up Matthew 12, 9 and hold it. Tonight's topic is entitled, Jesus Breaks the Sabbath. These three authors all tell the story. There's a little bit of variance in it, but not a whole lot. As usual, John decides just to leave it out. It wasn't important to him. He was on a different mission when he wrote his last book. Jesus' ministry is probably in its 8th or 9th month since his baptism. And in this particular story, he had been accused previously of breaking the Sabbath, doing things wrong. But this one seems like he deliberately breaks the Sabbath according to the Jews. In order to put the story into perspective, let's do some reviewing. Why do you think that God gave us the Sabbath to begin with? For our good?
Yeah.
In what way?
Rest, reflect on Him.
Okay. All right. What other way? What other reasons?
Rested again.
Why did God give us the Sabbath?
Huh. That's very easy.
Okay, well, I like easy.
Well, it was to remember Him.
Okay.
Because, as we've been told before, this world has forgotten God is what God is really like. And had the Sabbath been observed the way it was intended to be observed, there would never have been an idolater, an infidel, or an atheist. It would just never happen because we would have always remembered God as the Creator.
Okay. I used to think that.
Well, good.
However, we're going to come back and discuss that at the end. Okay? Very good. What other reasons?
Share the gospel with others.
By how with the Sabbath?
Showing His love, showing that your miracles He's done for you.
Okay. All right.
It was a time for communion with God and man.
Okay. All right. What other reasons?
We need physical and spiritual rest.
Okay. All right. When He first introduced the Sabbath to our world, He introduced it to Adam and Eve, who were sinless, worked 6 days, and it was to be a very beautiful thing. Between the time He gave it to Adam and Eve and the time of Christ when He came to this earth, was the Sabbath the same at Christ's coming as it was in the Garden of Eden?
The Sabbath was, but how it was treated and recognized was totally different.
Okay. In what ways?
It's become an idol.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's the same as in a lot of our people today, that we worship the day instead of the God who created the day. And for the Jews, that's what happened to them. It became such an important thing to worship that day, keep everything right on that day.
Okay.
And that's why.
What other ways that had gone wrong with the Sabbath? Yes.
The Sabbath was given as a gift, and it had become a total burden.
Okay. What other ways?
I'm thinking of an addition. Originally, the Sabbath was a memorial of creation. an opportunity to commune with God.
Mm-hmm.
It also added meaning after sin as a demonstration of restoration.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Probably the best interpretation of Hebrews is that of restoration rather than a day. Why this story, and why did Jesus do what he did? So whoever's got, let's start with Mark 3:1-6.
Again, he entered the city.
Okay, can everybody hear her? Let's talk loud.
Again, he entered the synagogue, and a man was there who had a withered hand. And they watched him to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man who had the withered hand, come here. And he said to them, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save a life or to kill? But they were silent. And he looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart, and said to the man, stretch out your hand. And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him.
Okay, that's far enough.
Yeah.
Far enough. Very good. So here's the Sabbath day, and Jesus goes deliberately to the temple. Now you must understand that the seating arrangements in the temple was always the same. The members of the Sanhedrin sat on the front rows. And so they see Jesus in the temple. They're sitting on the front row. And what was going through their mind?
Probably we're seeing what he's done in the past. Let's watch him see if he did.
Exactly right. They were, one of the interpretations says they were like spies. They were watching to see what he'd done, but it was not with, let's see if he does good or bad. It was the thought of, let's see what bad he would do. Now, is Jesus aware of this? Okay. Now, remember, this is the 8th or 9th month of his ministry. So, he has some decisions here. Why would he deliberately go to the temple? I thought we were supposed to not have confrontations. I thought we were supposed to kind of stay away from things that would cause problems. Why would he show up?
Well, he hadn't read the church manual to begin with.
What do you mean by that?
He did not operate according to the norms and the rules.
Okay.
Of the ruling class, of the church administration.
Okay. Why did he bring the man up in front of everybody?
By reaching out.
Okay. The man had a withered hand. By the way it's presented in the Greek, this was not a withered hand that he had had all of his life. Somewhere along the line, it had become either withered, hurt, whatever word you want to use. Some of the writings suggest that he was a stonemason and had hurt his hand and couldn't work, and that he had asked for healing from Jesus. That's from a book that didn't make it into the New Testament. So Jesus sees him. Now, what does he say to the Pharisees? Read it again.
He said to them, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm?
Okay, let's stop there. Why that question? I mean, that seems like it'd be a pretty simple answer.
Because they made it illegal to do good.
Okay.
In their view.
Norman's a doctor, so if Norman was back then, this is what Norman could do. He could look at people's eyes, ears, and throat. But if they had a cut finger, he would have to wait to sundown, take care of it. If it wasn't life-threatening, he definitely would have to wait for sundown. And if a wall fell on a guy, it would be Norman's job to come and ascertain that if the guy's alive, let's get him out. But if he's dead, let's leave him to after sundown. So that was their thinking. If it wasn't life-threatening, no medical help whatsoever. Billing hours would go down, Norman. They would go down. Okay. So why did Jesus ask this question?
He wanted to reveal the character of the rulers.
Okay.
He wanted to let them show their colors.
It's also a pretty logical statement. I mean, think about it, and there's not really a good answer you can give to that one. So no, it's, you know.
Yeah. Okay. But at least you would think it would make them to start thinking. Because who in their right mind would say, well, no, you can't. We don't want to do anything good or harm. What's his next question?
To save life or to kill. Yes.
Okay. Now, how did that one fit in? Do a little thinking on that one. He says, is it do good or do harm, to do life or destroy? Why that question?
Weren't they about to go run off on the Sabbath and Roman say, hey, we need to kill this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. What was going through their minds on the Sabbath day? They were looking for reasons to kill him. Do you get the perspective? Here's the Jewish perspective. In the Maccabean time, there were a bunch of Jews who ran off and hid in a cave. And so the guy that was chasing them knew that on the Sabbath the Jews wouldn't fight. They're inside the cave. He's outside the cave. So guess what he did?
He waited
till the Sabbath and went in there and massacred every one of them. Pompey, when he was against Jerusalem, he wanted to build a big bridge that they could get in to Jerusalem. So guess what he did? He waited to Sabbath and built his bridge, and they just sat there and watched him because they wasn't going to break the Sabbath.
How did the Jews get to that point that had so many rules and regulations? What was their basis for getting to that point?
Same basis as an elder in a church I attended one time said in Sabbath school class, it's definitely breaking the Sabbath to take a bath.
That's fear.
See, it's always easy. It's a good question, Charles. It's always easy to sit there and think how stupid those people were. But what have we done?
I went, just went back to Genesis and read the creation, and the Sabbath just says that God rested from his labor on Sabbath. He doesn't really, this day set aside for God rested, really doesn't refer to what man should do on Sabbath.
Okay.
For everybody, our church and the Jews and everybody else to go from what it was originally.
Well, now, in Exodus we have a few things, and it goes on. But what happens when you find a mark that sets you aside from other people, and you want to make sure that mark, which in this case for the Jews was the Sabbath, that you kept it, what do you tend to start looking at and figuring out?
Exclusive.
That's right. And you start figuring out, well, now exactly, I want to make sure that I keep this day correctly. And as Leroy says, and I agree wholeheartedly, it became the idol. It became the idol. It was the end all. So therefore, you started making all of these laws so that you knew that you were keeping the Sabbath.
I read that the rabbinical teaching was that if they could only get the people to keep one Sabbath, everybody, holy for that one Sabbath, then the Messiah would come.
Mm-hmm. Because they would have perfect people.
Yeah, they'd have perfect
people. So if you believe that, then how hard would you work to get that accomplished? And the leaders always have to tell people what's best for them. And that's exactly what happened over a period of time. Remember when Israel would wander away from God and they'd get in big time trouble, then they would come back to God. And as soon as that generation passed, they would wander away from God. Look in the book of Judges, 7 times. They leave God and they come back. Every time they left, they did worse. 7 times in the book of Judges. See? So then you just start making rules and say, well, now here's what we have to do. And we've done this. And, you know, I've been an Adventist since 6 years old. And I mean, I've seen all kinds of rules. I mean, you know, I mean, some of them are stupid now. But, you know, can you go water skiing on Sabbath? Well, no, but you can go boating as long as it's not a motor. And you paddle. So, I mean, you know, that's how we got it defined a lot. We was out on doing, we used to do singing bands. I don't know what I was doing on it. I can't sing, but I was there. And there was about 20 people, and we broke down on the highway outside of El Paso. And the big debate, I kid you not, was on Sabbath afternoon, while we was waiting for somebody to fix the car, and we all were hot, should we buy something to drink or not? Because after all, it was Sabbath. So,
when my kids came back from the Philippines, and there were a bunch of college age with them, and one Sabbath it was hot, and they wanted to go in the ocean. And some of the seasoned folks there said, absolutely, that is terrible, terrible sin. Now, you can go in up to your ankles. That's not bad. But if you get in above your knees, then it's very serious.
Because you're having fun.
Exactly.
That's right. That's right.
Your own pleasure.
That's right. See? So,
you know, one other thing, too, the scribes and the Pharisees, they made up all the rules for the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is nothing worse than for me to make up these dogmatic rules and for you to violate it. And that's going to make me very angry because I've been challenged.
That's right. So here Jesus looks at them and read again about life and death.
To save life or to kill.
I mean, wouldn't you think logically that this would hit home? Which is it better, to save life or to destroy or to kill? And they're sitting there trying to figure out on their day how to destroy him. I don't think you can get any plainer than that. All right, keep going. Keep going.
That was evil.
Okay, we'll move back up where he said life, yeah.
And they were silent. And he looked around at them with anger.
All right, now, let's get to this. Well, I didn't think it was nice to get angry. What Sue tells me.
Unfortunately, the churches have promoted that. I'm telling you, through the ages, anger is a sin and all of that. But
What? What do you do with this word, he got angry?
I would question the accuracy of the translation.
Okay, well, does anybody have any... Which version you have?
I think they're all the same.
Revised Standard Version.
Okay, Revised Standard Version, pretty close to the Greek. Uh-huh. It's the one I copied out of for a year. Who else? Any other versions? Which verse is that?
This verse 5.
Okay. Mark 3, verse 5. Anybody got anything else for anger?
It's interesting, the next sentence, that was grieved at their hardness of heart.
It says anger here.
Okay. Anybody got anything different?
It says anger too.
Anger.
Oh yeah, anger in mind.
Okay.
Okay. It's interesting that...
Pardon?
Anger and grief.
Okay.
It's interesting that the first best of grief is...
As you, if you go through the Bible, you'll see what hurt God the most and what also brought Him to action was when He sees man's inhumanity to man. There's a thread that runs through the whole Scriptures. Always it's man's inhumanity to man. Thus at the temple, when He drove out the thieves. Why? Because they were taking advantage of the poor. People had no money. They were cheating. It's always man's inhumanity to man. Here's a man that had a withered hand, could not make a living, who had a family. And he wants to be healed, brought whole. And the religious leaders of the church are sitting there praying that He'll heal him so that they can criticize and eventually kill Him for breaking a day that they thought that they were keeping so holy. Now, somebody go to Matthew 12, verse 9, 10, or 11. I think that's the version I want, and read that one.
It says, going on from that place, He went into their synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, they asked Him, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? He said to them, if any of you has a sheep and it falls into the pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out?
Okay, let's stop there. Little different version of the story. Probably it all was a running conversation. Just like most things, you tend to remember what's most interesting to you. For instance, in the three Gospels, the only one that says it was the guy's right hand was Luke. And what was Luke's profession? Doctor, so he would notice if it was the right hand or the left hand. So, like that. Now, Jesus says to him, if there's a sheep in the pit, what would you do with it? And what's the immediate answer?
Get it out.
Was this in their law?
Oh, sure. Yeah, their finances.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no problem doing that on the Sabbath. So if your sheep fell in the pit, man, by all means, get that little thing out, nourish it, take care of it. By the way, you couldn't do it if the sheep was hungry. You had to wait till after sundown. But if he was real hungry, and I guess you threw him in a pit, then you could pull him out and feed him. Just the way my mind works. So,
way around it.
Yeah, way around. Always look for that way to get around it. Absolutely, see. Do you see what in the world these self-righteous people's thinking was? Here's a man that desired to be healed. Previously, he had healed a man that had been sick for 38 years on the Sabbath. And he says, can't you see what you would do for a little animal without hesitation? And yet here's a human being And you say, no way. By the way, does that happen in our world today?
Why, yes.
What do you mean?
We put more value on other things, much more value. That was a financial thing. That land that's in the ditch. They would lose money. And we certainly, I mean, that's part of our financial crisis. Is people valuing gain more than human life.
Okay. If somebody was outside this on this street and they began beating up another human being, most likely what would happen? That's right. If a person's out here beating a dog to death, what would happen? Do good to get out with his life. That's right. When Satan works the hardest, human life has no value. And what Satan did, he took the very precious thing that God gave to his children, the gift of the Sabbath, and it should have been a delight to the children of Israel, to God's people, and he worked hard to make that very gift be the biggest curse in their life. Do y'all get that picture? Because it became the fundamental thing, became what they were going to be different from everybody because we're Sabbath keepers, and that became a curse so much that when Jesus stood before them in a temple with a man who desired healing, they had no problems if he had pulled a sheep out of a pit. But they had every problem in the world when he made his hand whole. And that was Satan's delight. We have to be careful in our lives, in our church, our denomination, all aspects of Christianity, that nothing becomes more important than the value of somebody's life, and the value of somebody's spiritual life. And sometimes I think, in the past at least, we've all got caught in that same trap. Let's go to, see, we've got Matthew's, let's go to Luke. Luke 6:16, let's see what Dr. Luke has to say about this story. Who has it?
6:16, I have it.
Okay.
Are you sure it's 16?
Oh, who do I know? What do I know?
What?
6.
Luke 6:6?
Yeah, 6:6.
There we go.
Thank you.
And it came about on another Sabbath that he entered the synagogue and was teaching, and there was a man there whose right hand was withered. And the scribes and the Pharisees were watching him closely to see if he healed on the Sabbath, in order that they might find reason to accuse him. But he knew what they were thinking, and he said to the man with the withered hand, "Rise and come forward." And he rose and came forward. And Jesus said to them, "I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath day to do good or to do harm, to save a life or to destroy a life?" And after looking around at them all, he said to the man with the withered hand, "Stretch out your hand." And he did so, and his hand was restored. But they themselves were filled with rage and discussed together what they might do to Jesus.
Okay. How do you explain that? Where's the logic in this story? Okay. What other things comes to your mind?
Sometimes when we're exposed, we either humble ourselves and recognize the error, or we become more hardened. And I think they got to the point where they just became, the rage was like they were exposed, and now they wanted to do away with the person they thought were causing this, like it was out there instead of it being in here. Mm-hmm.
Okay, both of them, very, very good. Any other comments?
They really pronounced judgment on themselves. We learned in the other verse about the sheep.
Mm-hmm.
They could see clear. They should have seen clearly that they disregarded human value. And they appropriated above that financial gain.
Mm-hmm.
So they indicted themselves.
Is there a danger when you've been at something so long that you kind of think you know it all?
Absolutely.
You know, I've been a sales trainer for, well, in this particular industry for 20 years otherwise. And, you know, guys will come in and hire new people and they'll say, well, I think what, maybe have you ever thought about doing this? You know, and I'm sitting there thinking, let's see, now I've been at this 22 years, you've been at it about 10 minutes, and you know, but the other day, lo and behold, somebody brought in a new concept that I said, you know, I really haven't thought about that. And so I took it and rearranged a little bit and put it in my training. Are we sometimes in our own spiritual life think we know it all? And if so, what danger is there to that?
Are we in our spiritual lives? What was the other word?
Know it all.
Know it all. Oh.
He couldn't be talking about us.
No, but Ernie and I have both lived through this. And that's, I know where he's coming from. And it makes, for me, I can see that even in our denomination, it makes us the most critical, unchristian people in the world to set up rules of how you're supposed to observe the Sabbath. And if anybody doesn't do that, boy, we criticize you something.
Mm-hmm.
And it still goes on today, and it hurts me, really. You get every one of our magazines, and the first thing you open up, oh, the sundown calendar, we got have that sundown calendar up. Be sure we don't fringe on that edge.
Well, I think all churches have things that make them that way if they're not careful. But we cannot be to a point where, you know, we have it all, we know it all, because if we're going to be in heaven studying for eternity, what does that tell us? I mean, you know, outside of the 2,300 days, which I've mastered, you know, everything else is going to be kind of up for grabs. So you have to just believe and to look and reevaluate. I think one of the things that we're scared of in our own life and in our own church and Christianity itself is to reevaluate what our stance are and see if there's correct. So
I think sometimes the more we know or have ideas about God, I think the more we don't really know. And so, to me, any real search of God creates more questions than it does actually a definitive answer.
Mm-hmm.
Because think in our finite mind and our finite world, we know that we're going to understand infinite is ridiculous.
Let's look at the way the Jews looked at the Sabbath. There's, you know what, you know, 10 or 15, 20 here. Is what you do on the Sabbath, could that be wrong and Sandra do exactly the same thing and it'd be, quote, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I remember a gentleman in the Arlington church used to talk how he used to go motorcycle. Now, this was 30, 40, 40 years ago. Go motorcycle riding on Sabbath afternoon with his boys. And, heavily criticized. See, so.
But you could go to church on a motorcycle, but to go riding in the afternoon, wasn't
okay. I mean, You know, what a pity that our minds even go there. What a pity. And growing up, I mean, I just hated the Sabbath. What I thought was good about the Sabbath was it was the only meal of the week that Mom fixed. Hope you don't listen to this, Mom. She fixed full lunch and had dessert. We only had dessert once a week, you know. And so the meal was good. And then bless my heart, you know, their heart. My parents would go and lay down and take a nap. And here's my brother and I just sitting there. You wouldn't dare turn on a TV or listen to radio. You'd get killed if you did that. Couldn't go outside and play ball. Get killed if you did that. Now tell me for 3 hours on Sabbath afternoon how that was a delight. So I go to Keene.
I know when I was in high school.
Found out lots of things to do on Sabbath afternoon.
When I was in high school, on track day. And of course, all the track meets were always on Saturday. And the coaches came out to the house to talk with Dad to see if they can't get some kind of permission.
Special dispensation.
Yeah, so I could run on Sabbath. And their argument was, and in those days it was, sports was a very character-building thing to do. You learned teamwork, you learned all the things that you do to get along with people. And I know they asked if this activity is a character-building thing, why would you deny that on one day of the week?
Well, it's interesting in the New Testament, Christ who came to show the character of our Father, when it came to most of the things in the four Gospels on the Sabbath, He was accused of breaking it instead of reinforcing it. Perhaps there's a lesson for us in there to understand why God gave the Sabbath. Now, where I disagree with Leroy a little bit, and it's just a matter of words. He says if we'd have kept the Sabbath, there would be no idolatry, that's right, if we kept the Sabbath in the right context that God wanted.
As it should have been.
Yes.
I think the Sabbath is very important to Jesus and God, to Godhead, or He wouldn't have put it in the Ten Commandments and it wouldn't have been part of creation. And to me, one of the primary things of Satan is to distort the true nature of God.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's just the same pattern that the true Sabbath was distorted in such a bad way that it equals to the distortion of the character of God.
Absolutely.
Satan takes two of the main things and has worked to distort both of them.
Yeah. Because your viewpoint of how to keep the Sabbath is your viewpoint of what God's like. Because if you've got to sneak around and do this, then you know you think of God.
We tend to look at the Ten Commandments as rules and laws. And in that context, the focus becomes the penalty.
Yes.
Jesus solved that problem by taking away the penalty. So the only reason now to keep any of the laws or rules is to, if you love God, to show love mm-hmm. to God and glorify God.
Mm-hmm.
So He took away the penalty so we can get away from the focus of the penalty and the rules
right.
idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, he gave it as a gift because it's good for us. Even, you know, Mark says Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And so we got any comments? So what did we learn from tonight?
Well, unless we have the gospel in our hearts, the Sabbath is useless.
Very well put. Very well put. and the days meant for family and communion. But when we start defining what we can do or not do, I think we've lost the entire meaning of the day. Yes?
I'm just like you and probably a lot of us with all the restrictions we had back when we were kids on Sabbath, and how we really didn't look forward to it. And in my adulthood, when I really become to know the understanding of Sabbath, and it's become such a blessing, now it's hard to understand how people in such a stressful society, if they don't have a Sabbath, how they actually survive, because it is such a blessing, not only from the religious side of it, but from a personal side of it. Mm-hmm. It's just really hard to, I'd hate to ever go without a Sabbath.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why God gave it to us to be a blessing. And I'm the same way. As I got older and older, you know, you look forward to the day. You look forward to that time. Okay. Any other comments? Okay. Let's bow our head. Father in heaven, to think that as your Son went into the temple to bring joy to a human being, that the religious leaders would criticize, look at it, watch it, and want to kill him. Help us, Father, never to be judgmental. Help us to understand the worth of a human being, and help us to show love to one another. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.